stone path through dense forest, mixed pine and deciduous. The still air was all pine scent and flowers. Children were playing on the rocks at the top of the hill, laughing and yelling. "That's not Spanish," I said. "Catalan." "They're still allowed to speak it," came a thought from nowhere. We came to a particularly dense part of the grove, and Kate took my hand and pulled. "They can't see us from here," she whispered. I let her lead me down a slight incline, almost slipping on the pine needles. She kissed me with some force and ran her fingers roughly through my hair. She dragged me down behind a bush. "Kate, someone will..." "So what?" she said, and started unbuttoning my shirt. "This is a place to play." I looked around while she busied herself and decided that it would indeed be hard for anyone to see us. She had my shirt open and was smothering my chest with kisses while she fumbled with my belt. I wasn't sure what to do with her garments, but it turned out to be simple. She delicately hiked up the skirt and didn't have anything on underneath. She held on to me like a kind of saddle horn and managed to mount me, an erotic but silly sight, completely composed even to the flower and small hat from the waist up. She embraced me and we thrashed around as quietly as possible. The coupling was brief but intense for both of us. Panting, she buttoned me back up. "You see, there's a time and a place for everything." We lay for a while, looking up through the branches at the calm sky, not needing to talk. Then we brushed each other off and continued up the path. There were benches near the top where you could sit and watch the children play. We laughed along with them, a little hysterical with our shared secret. The adults looked at us with a mixture of expressions, perplexed or knowing. We finished the wine by passing the bottle back and forth, which may have shocked some of them. "So," she said, "do you enjoy being married?" "So far, so good." I took her hand. "Actually, I can't imagine living without you." She paused, looking at me in a curious way.
"Neither can I without you."
She shook her head quickly and stood up. "Let's go bother the children." The very top of the hill was a pile of huge black boulders, carefully arranged to look natural but also provide stable pathways. The children were running around playing what looked like a form of hide-and-go-seek. We opted for King of the Hill, picking our clumsy adult way up to the top. The children giggled, and some of the adults looked away. I suppose Kate was exposing a little too much ankle. They didn't know the half of it. On the top of the pile, we were on the same level as the treetops of the copse where we had made love. I peered down with a little anxiety, wondering whether we might have provided a little premature sex education for the children, but the foliage was thick enough. In the other direction, the sea glittered, and the old city looked magical behind a veil of haze.
"This is odd."
She knelt and picked up a dusty booklet.
"It's in English."
She flipped through it and passed it to me. "Vacation lands. Touristy pictures of foreign sights. Some of the pages had been torn out. Maybe a schoolchild used them for some project, then threw it away." I shook my head. "I could swear I've seen this before."
"Probably something like it."
She was looking over my shoulder as I leafed through.
"Ooh, Tahiti! Now that would be a place for a honeymoon."
"I wonder how the flu is there."
"I bet they don't even have it. It's an island."
I started to frame a logical response to that, but the picture was intriguing.
"Look, the girl isn't wearing anything up top."
I had noticed. "Well, I suppose if you'd like to." The rocks around us lightened to pure white, and so did the sky, and we disappeared into it. 6. Trouble in the Big City. Thursday's my service day. There were no emergencies, real or imagined, needing my help, so I went on down to the farms as usual. I had to take an early shift, 0300 to noon, because I had to be at work for a couple of hours starting 1400. My farm work is not exactly heavy labor.
Because of my part-time job as a cook, I work in the herb gardens, which is not only pleasantly aromatic, but also pleasantly distant from the goats and chickens. It's bright in the farms, which bothers some people. I strip to shorts and soak in the light and heat, moving from tray to tray, breathing in the changing green and spicy smells. More of my work is harvesting than anything else, which is as much instinct as method. I provide for 3 mess halls as well as the Mech restaurant. They'll get their boxes of refrigerated herbs of the week on the evening shuttle. My notebook has their menus for the coming week, so I estimate how much of what they need for each meal and type it in, usually Wednesday night. Last night I was up late at work, though, as well as up early. 3 of us had done 1918 and were comparing notes, for Bruce to go in today and maybe tomorrow and work on some anachronisms. So I wasn't too scientific this morning. I scanned the menus for oddities and found only 2. Otherwise, I eyeballed an average weekly amount of each herb and multiplied by 3, putting them in large cold boxes to be divided later. Some herbs I snipped into labeled envelopes. Most of them I sent over still rooted. The kitchens would send back the pots of medium for recycling. I made separate boxes for our restaurant, which was Arabic this week, and required some oddities like fresh cumin and a bushel of mint, Rashad cress and a kilogram of ginger. It was pleasant work, as usual, requiring just enough judgment and manual dexterity to keep one's attention. In a way, I was rehearsing for next month's concert at the same time. I had the music program search for various versions of the pieces scheduled for that night's performance and play them at random. There was the inevitable 20th century piece, jazz, for which I'd have to use one of the steel string guitars, amplified. That was going to take as much practice as all the others combined. Kate and I took advantage of it being Thursday by having a picnic lunch. There are tables set up in various of the farms for that purpose. None by the goats, sensibly, but several in the herb section. I'd made chicken sandwiches, and we walked around the various trays, picking a salad. "Do not bind the mouths of the kine that tread the grain," I quoted, and had to explain it. Cattle and the King James Bible were not everyday topics anymore. She was glad to get out of her coveralls and soak up some tropical sun. The noontime light from the 4 suns along the ship's central axis made it about as bright as dawn or dusk on Earth. Plenty of photons for trees and grass and people. We sat directly under one of the lights and enjoyed the thermos of cold tea she'd brought from work. "You'll have to fend for yourself tonight," she said. "I'm taking the 1 o'clock over to ours and asked for a bunk." "What's up?" "Well, they don't know. A shortage of plasmids. What do you know about plasmid-mediated enzymatic biodegradation?"
"It's for polymers," I said. "Shredded up plastic and all."
"That's more than most people know. At the end of the cycle, we should have all of our plasmids back. Ours is about 0.5% down."
"That's serious, considering we had about 1,000 years to go."
"Yeah." She unrolled her sandwich and sprinkled a little salt. "It's only ours. None of the other units has any shortfall. If I don't find anything obvious, and I won't, we'll do a radioisotope trace. The guys at Sanitas can send over a gram of iodine something.
Probably 131, 8-day half-life."
"Thanks, Professor. We'll dope some plastic garbage with it and see where it shows up in the waste stream. The plasmids ought to stay in a closed loop. Any iodine shows up downstream, we can walk it back."
"I'd put aside 4 eggs to make us a souffle." She didn't care for Arabic food or maybe Ahmed's cooking.
"Guard them. We'll still be swimming in couscous when I get back."
She rubbed my leg with her toe under the table.
"Appreciate it. You're still checking, what, 1916?
1918. Something peculiar about fine arts and maybe music. Bruce went in this morning to check."
"As an academic?"
"No, we don't have an art one for that era, not yet. Physical science, electrical arts, various literatures, history as always. So we sent him in as an art dealer."
"Earth in on it?"
"Oh yeah, Vienna.
That's where the year was last updated. They'll be running the same template through. We'll compare notes. It wasn't just, or even primarily, their updating the fine arts database for the teens. The time machine evolved synergistically. Something that had been added to 1968 could resonate a half century earlier. Earth moved so much faster than we did in that regard, with a million times as many potential customers. We would update as often as possible for as long as possible. Other things had higher priority, of course, and the time machine data streams could suck up all the bandwidth for an hour at a time, just to update 1 year completely. It didn't happen often. Staying with anyone? Over in ours?
Jacob, I'm still a newlywed.
We both laughed. Our contract didn't have anything about that, though some did.
What, your...
The whole ballet troupe, I said. Boys as well as girls. We'll clean up afterward, though.
See that you do. The last time I found a tutu behind the couch.
She walked back to the office with me, and we said goodbye. After she left, it occurred to me that I might worry. We treat the shuttle almost as casually as an elevator, or a kind of taxi without windows. Strap yourself in, wait for the clunk, unstrap, and go through the door. But it's a tiny spaceship jumping from one accelerating behemoth to another. What if it missed? After a minute, less than a minute, it would simply be gone, as lost as if it had disappeared. If nobody noticed, it hadn't arrived. No one else was in the office, so I keyed up emergency procedures for the shuttle. Turns out that all five of Aspera's propulsion systems would shut down instantly if the shuttle didn't arrive on time. One of the repair vehicles would backtrack to it, following a radio beacon that had a sealed, independently powered transmitter. Ferry it back to Mech or Sanitas, depending on the nature of the problem. Of course, you have to ask, but what if? If the propulsion systems didn't shut down, it would be as if the shuttle were accelerating away from us at a centimeter per second squared. Not exactly rocketing away, a meter after the first 10 seconds. And someone would notice, someone would be waiting. Or would they? 100 seconds, 100 meters, and picking up speed. How long would it take to turn everything around and go after them? We did have a profile for turnaround, of course, since we'd be doing it at the spin-down point, but it took almost 30 minutes minimum, by which time the shuttle would be flying away at 18 meters per second. I closed my eyes and did the math. Speed up, slow down, match velocities, call it an hour and a half total. So nothing to worry about. I resisted asking how much air the shuttle carried. Then I shook my head. Silly. If there was a failure, they wouldn't turn the whole damn thing around. They'd just send the ambulance shuttle from Sanitas. It had plenty of power to tow another shuttle back. I punched up Bruce's profile. He was due to come out in 20 minutes. Rebecca and Lowell came in. She saw what was on the screen. We're not late? No, I was just checking. Go back and have a couple more desserts. Her appetite was legendary. She was built like a string bean.
Don't encourage her, Lowell said. It's pathetic the way she stands by the recycler and whines.
She ignored him. Check Vienna yet? Just got here. I swiveled back to the board and entered 2 4-finger data cords. A clock counted down from 1 hour 18 minutes. She checked her watch. That's almost an hour after he gets out. Leave him wired up, then go right back in to check. See how he feels. No big rush if he wants to rest. Lowell looked at his watch.
Don't have forever. You've got 1929 at 1500.
As if I'd forget. Yeah, but we can put Vienna's 1918 in the buffer for Bruce.
We can, he said.
It would complicate things. The buffer was like a limited one-person time machine. It was sort of like watching an old-time movie, except the people on the screen interact with you. Not realistic, but it was okay for checking data. The problem was that Bruce would have to unhook from the main machine and then make the transition to the two-dimensional buffer. It would be easier if we could just keep him wired up while he debriefed, then put him back in the main machine with the new Vienna database patched in. Send him back to wherever he'd found anomalies in the old version.
Saw Kate headed for the lift, Rebecca said.